Welcome to Today with Jared James. And now, your host, Jared James.
Hey everyone, Jared James here, and welcome to Today with Jared James. This is episode 80. As always, guys, if you get a chance, make sure to subscribe, make sure to leave a review, not only a five-star review, but also a written review. I think on today's episode, you're going to enjoy it. I am joined today by Terrence Murphy, who I'll just call it real estate mogul. We'll get into that a little bit. Former second-round pick of the Green Bay Packers, who decided to take those talents at some point. We'll get into that. Into real estate. And we are lucky enough that today he is going to kind of share with us what he's doing, how he's doing it. And, you know, as all of you know, any story can be inspiring as far as like, how did I do it? What do I do? Because as Tony Robbins and so many others say, success leaves clues, right? And so we want to talk about that. So with that being said, Terrence, do you go by Terrence, man, or do you go by something short? Do your friends call you T? Do they call you like, what do you go by?
Terrence is good.
Terrence all right, is Terrence, good. Man. Yeah. Awesome. Well, hey, man, welcome. Welcome to the podcast. You want to say hello to everybody before we get going here?
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, brother. I'm excited to be a part of the show. Just want to just pour into your audience, be real, be organic. Like we talked about earlier before we got on the podcast.
Yeah.
I want this, you know, can I curse?
I think you just did, man. Go for it.
I cut it off. I said, shh.
Yeah, I heard it.
Yeah. We don't want this to be forced, right? We just want it to be natural, have a good conversation. And I think a lot of people get a lot of inspiration for my story and what you're doing too.
Yeah, man. You know, it's funny. I said that to you beforehand. I don't do a lot of podcasts with people. I don't. We get a ton of requests like, hey, let's go on the podcast. Let's do whatever. I will tell you that my HR director is the biggest Green Bay Packer fan in the history of the world. I'm not even kidding, man. And so he sends it over to me and he's like, come on, man. Come on. You know, he's all excited. He has questions he wanted me to ask. Like he literally wears yellow Crocs into the office and they don't look good. He can pull it off, but they look about like this cup, right? Like they, yeah, he's like half Big Bird, half normal person. But he said, I don't do them a lot because I feel like so many of these things are not organic. They're not, you know, I don't go do podcasts because it's always, what are the three things you'd recommend for, you know, real estate people and whatever. And that stuff's good, but you just want something deeper. Like when I look at my favorite podcasts, it's not what they do. It's just conversation, right? They're just talking and what comes up and they're being real and you're finding out who people really are. And I think that's what I love about the podcasting game is like, who are you really? Not what's your 60-minute keynote on stage, not what's your, you know, your 52-second reel on Instagram. Like, how do you think? You know what I mean? Like, how do you, ever notice whenever you talk to people, you know, they always talk about what they overcame, but now everything's always perfect. I always tell people like, hey, we want to know like what you overcame, but we also want to know what are you trying to figure out now? You know, because that's real, you know? Yeah. So give me a little bit of your story, man. I mean, I think I said it in the intro, correct me if I'm wrong, second round pick in the NFL to the Green Bay Packers. Was that the year that Aaron Rodgers was number one?
Yeah, we were roommates, me and Aaron Rizzo. I call him A. Rizzo, but yeah, he was the first pick in the draft. I was the second pick. We were roommates. I got drafted to be his Batman and Robin, right? I'm the top receiver in the game. And man, we used to eat people up in OTAs and practice and we were scrimmage because I would run with the ones with Brett Favre.
Yeah.
And then I would run with the twos against the first team defense and me and A-Rod would light people's ass up.
So, oh, that's right. He was two back then. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy. So you were, that's so interesting because people forget that story is that he had come in and he was technically behind Brett Favre and there was all that stuff about they, you know, they brought in and he dropped further than he was supposed to drop. And then I guess that was back when the Green Bay Packers would actually draft help for him. But actually they did do it this past year too. They got the wide receiver out of, what's his name? The speedster. I forget his name right now, but
I think Dakota State or somewhere like that.
Yeah. So, all right, good. So you guys got to room, you got to whatever. So tell me a little bit about that, man. You came up in the NFL. How many years did you play? What was the reason that the career stopped? Like what's the whole, because obviously we're going to get into, you know, we're talking right now because you're in real estate. You know, I called you mogul. Like you're doing work. You're doing what you need to do. What did that process look like? Like through the NFL, what ended it all? What got you into real estate? Let's just hear it a little bit.
Yeah, I think where it really started, man, going back a little further, is just being born and raised in East Texas. And if anybody knows anything about East Texas, it's a rural place. It's rough. You got to be able to stand on your own 2 feet. And I grew up with a single mom who was a very type A mom, right? She just pushed us out there. And so I kind of carried that mentality, was a quarterback throughout high school. I had about 17, 18 offers to be a quarterback. Chose to come to Texas A&M and move the receiver. At that time, people were like, why would you go to A&M and play a position you've never played? They got all these five-star recruits. But I did it and slept on a guy's couch. I graduated on a Friday, packed my stuff on that Saturday, was there on Monday, slept on a guy's couch and worked my ass off to get to the first two teams and ended up, you know, doing really well, man. Freshman All-American. I left Texas A&M.
Who was your quarterback then?
So I had a couple quarterbacks, man. I had Mark Ferris, which is he had played MLB baseball, and I had Reggie McNeil. So obviously I'm a little older than Johnny. I knew Johnny from East Texas, but he came after me.
Yeah.
And they went to the Packers, was drafted, and I also fell. I was projected to go top 15. And then we started running the option my senior year instead of throwing the ball.
There you go. So it was opportunity. You didn't get the same reps as far as throwing the ball.
Yeah. And I had double coverage every game. So I knew me and A-Rod had that connection. And we both knew we were projected to go top 15 and it didn't happen. But either way, go to Green Bay, doing really well. I'm number two in the NFC behind Steve Smith, which is a Hall of Famer. I was doing really, really well. I got injured 6 games into my rookie season and ended my career.
What do you mean by number two behind Steve Smith? What do you mean?
So number two behind Steve Smith in kickoff return average. So I was already doing really well in special teams, already catching some balls, you know, just getting in there, making plays.
Yep.
And then God had a different plan, man. So I ended up retiring and was looking for that next passion. He showed me real estate.
How many years in was that?
I got injured my rookie year, bro.
Oh, God. It was like right in the beginning. Did you ever, I don't know if you ever saw the interview that I did with Q, Quintavious on here. He had played at Ole Miss and then he went to Giants camp and stuff, but very similar. Got hurt, got, you know, whatever. And then it came to, there were some other opportunities that came along. But at that point, he was already thriving in real estate. And he started looking at it and in his mind, he was kind of going, well, let me see here. You know, my prime as an NFL player, you know, is for about the next 4 or 5 years. My prime as an entrepreneur is way beyond that. I think I'm going to stick with this. Was it ever even an option for you to go back, or was the injury such, like, what was the injury? Was it such that it's like, no, this is over. Like you can't be at that top level anymore.
Yeah. So I had a neck injury, but I ended up, going through, you know, physical therapy, traveling, seeing the top specialists in the world. And I was trying to train and come back. I actually worked out for Gruden when he was the head coach at the Buccaneers.
Yep.
Went out and blew the workout up in Tampa Bay. I ran like a 4.3 on wet grass. It was crazy.
You were running 4.3s?
Yeah, I'm a 4. I was a 4.3 guy for sure.
Was that for 30 yards or 40 yards? Because that's pretty quick, man.
No. You just put my name in YouTube. You'll see.
What could you run? What could you run a 40 in today? And don't give me Terrell Owens. You know, I could still run a 43.
Well, you know, I look at T.O. and people like that, and I kind of feel bad for them because I feel like they can't find their identity in something.
Exactly
else.
Right.
And that's where, for me, there was a season you couldn't even get me to talk about football. I was so passionate about real estate. I have a wife. I have kids. I have a ministry. I have a nonprofit teaching underprivileged kids about football, finance, and faith. So I'm doing so much more. You couldn't pay me $1 billion to run a 40 if you had. I wouldn't do it.
But back then, though, I mean, when it happens, all you've ever, and correct me if I'm wrong, but all you ever thought about, all you ever dreamed about, the goal, everything was. And then, as you said, you know, you and A-Rod were going to go out there and tear some people up. Like, that was it. So when you get that and a neck injury, my God, I mean, not everybody's Peyton Manning comes back and sets the record. That was ridiculous. But like, those are bad injuries, right? When that happens, what's your mentality? Like, was it everything just like, is this, like, you know, I mean, like what place are you at that moment in life? And how long does that last? And how'd you get out of that?
Yeah, it was a very tough experience. I mean, you got to think football was like my best friend, right? So you lose a best friend, you lose a lifetime dream. You know, I tell people all the time, they think what I've built now, they think it's because of football. But I explain to them, I only got paid to play football 1 year of my life. So the other 22 years, I did it for free, right? And so I was just passionate about it. But I was depressed, bro. I was 22 years old. Looking back, I was a kid and my dream was taken away. I got paralyzed from the neck down, temporarily paralyzed. So I went through a lot. But man, I gave my life back to Christ. I found a new passion and I just had to rebuild myself mentally, spiritually, and physically. And I'm telling you, man, like I already was a warrior mentality, but that's where the whole mantra of Black Wolf came from. And so it's that wolf mentality. And so I'm always just climbing the hill now because they say, you know, the wolf on the hill is never as hungry as the wolf climbing the hill. So I'm always climbing the hill.
That's so interesting. And for you, was it so when it went, you said you got depressed and we hear this story all the time. I don't know how many of our people, you know, follow or follow sports or follow whatever, but you hear this over and over again, like in an athlete's life. When the career ends, you know, most of them go bankrupt. Almost all of them, whether they admit it or not, get depressed, don't know what to do. And it's because so much of that focus, so much of their identity was locked up in that. But I don't think it's only that. I think it's also so much of their certainty is lined up in that. Like when you live in a world where you're trying to find your place and you're trying to find what you're good at, and you're trying to find what your purpose is and you're trying to, and your whole life has been reinforced that this is who you are. This is what you're great at. This is their certainty. It's like you step on a field. You mentioned 4.340. When I was in high school, college, whatever, I was a really fast guy. I wasn't 4.3 fast, but around the people around me, I was really fast. And one of the things my father used to always say to me is he'd say, man, you're so lucky. And I'd say, why? And he'd go, speed doesn't have a bad day, you know? Mm-hmm. And he used to say, hey, he didn't say this, but now I equate it to this, but you know, Steph Curry can have an off shooting day. You know, whoever it is can have a bad speed, never has a bad day. Like there is certainty in that, that you know who you are, you know what you can do, you know. Do you think that part of that time frame of just depression and wondering was because that certainty was taken away? Like who I am, my identity, like what I can go to, that where my value is? Do you think that had something to do with it?
I think for anybody, it's tied into that. You look at a lot of people who transition, and we get a lot of people that transition into real estate, right? Because they've been in another career. You know, the average age in America is 56 years old. So that means they've done a lot of other stuff before they get into our industry. For me, what I was really hurt about is I knew what I had been through to get to that point. To, you know, if you just walk through my story and realize, like, golly, he went through that and that and that. And still to this day, if you put together my workout at the combine, it's one of the greatest workouts in the history of the NFL combine. I went 4.3 on the 40. I had a 42, 43 inch vertical. I benched 225, 25 times or 23 times. They cut me two reps. I did a 10-11 on broad jump. I was a 3.93 on short shuttle.
Like you're an athletic freak.
Yes. So the NFL game was perfect for me because it was going to free me up to be able to do what I do best. So God just had a different plan, man. And I took that passion. I'm going to tell you what got me out of depression.
Yeah.
Is watching Aaron Rodgers and Nick Collins, the guys that were in my draft, hold up that Super Bowl trophy.
Really? That didn't go the other way for you. That wasn't like, crap, that should be me. That was that pull. How did that pull you out? Explain that to me.
Well, it sent me the other way that night for sure. I mean, I stayed up all night sitting there looking at the wall. And the crazy thing is they won the trophy in Dallas. I'm from Tyler. Tyler's right outside of Dallas.
Yeah.
But that morning I woke up the next morning and I was like, okay, I can be, I was so happy for A-Rod. I was so happy for Nick. I was so happy for Ted Thompson and the organization. But I should have been no brainer. But I say, all right, what's my Super Bowl? And I literally the next morning I wrote all my notes, all my goals on my mirror. And I said, all right, that's my Super Bowl. That's what I'm finna go fucking chase that. And it was real estate. And I started my independent brokerage. I had only did like 7 transactions at Keller Williams at the time. I didn't know nothing about real estate sales, but I said, I'm gonna start my own company. I started my own brokerage. I scaled it to 1.2 billion in sales in 8 years.
But wait a second, before you even get there, why real estate though? Like, cause people get into real estate because their parents were in real estate or one of their parents, people get into real estate because they, you know, watch HGTV or Selling Sunset and think that, you know, everybody can just hang out, sell houses and be a millionaire. People get into real estate, you know, for a lot of different reasons. What's that transition? Why did you go from that and go, hey, real estate? And when you did that, what part of real estate was intriguing you at the moment? Was it sales? Was it commercial? Was it investing? Like, what made you think real estate is next? And what part of it was it for you?
Yeah, the first thing as I studied real estate, it was I saw kind of this mentality, eat what you kill.
I love that. That's so, man, I was the same way.
Yeah, eat what you kill. And so that's where, once again, the Black Wolf mentality comes in. But more than anything, I said, okay, I had these NFL job offers, you know, from different teams to go coach and travel. And I just knew I didn't want to be that person bouncing around every year. I didn't really want to recruit, right? Because you got to go talk to these 16-year-old kids and tell them they're the best thing since sliced bread. And a lot of them, I didn't believe they were. So, and I still don't. That's why I don't look at recruiting. Until you play on a college football field, I don't care what you did in high school. So
a lot of talented people you don't know till you show up. Like, yeah, because the guy across you is talented too.
Correct. So yeah. And so then when I looked at real estate, what got me is the market downturn. So when 08, 2008, 9, and 10, obviously stock market, I called my financial advisor. I was like, dude, if I'm going to lose, I'm going to lose on me. I'm not going to lose watching the market turn to shit.
Yeah.
And he said, well, what are you going to do? You're 23 years old. What are you going to do with your money? I said, give me 2 days. I literally went to Barnes and Noble that night. That's when Amazon wasn't really as big as it is now.
I get it, man.
And I went in there with a grocery basket, and I went to finance. I went to real estate. I went to entrepreneurship, anything about business. And I just started pushing books in my buggy. I walked out of there with a grocery basket full of books. And I read Robert Kiyosaki, who took my money that night. I read it in like 24 hours. That's and I called him back the next day.
What'd you read? Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
No, well, that's in the Rich Dad, Poor Dad series, but this is the book no one really knows about. Who Took My Money? That's the name of the book.
Yeah.
And so I read Who Took My Money, and I said, I want to do real estate. And so I told him to go ahead and take my losses in the market, wire me my funds. And that was my seed capital to go and start learning how to get into this game. And so my wife got a job immediately because she had a degree from UT. I told her I didn't want to work for anybody else. I was going to figure out how to do it on my own. And from that point, I just blazed that trail of entrepreneurship.
So a couple things, man. First off, your story is very similar to mine. I was not a second round draft pick in the NFL, but I got into real estate because I like the idea that my success or my failure is on me. I love the idea that I can remember, you know, when I was selling real estate, you know, I was raised by a single mother, two brothers, you know, never graduated high school, let alone college. And I can remember my first time selling real estate where I made over $100,000 in a month. And I remember thinking to myself, like, my mother didn't make $100,000 in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking to myself that, hey, I know how I did this. If I can do this once, I can do this again. And mm-hmm. I love the idea that there was actually no ceiling on what I could do. And most jobs, when they say there's no ceiling on what you can make, that just means you're going to be broke in a couple months and it's your fault. Right. But there was legit nothing like, you know, it wasn't like, hey, slow down. The other agents are starting to talk. You're doing too many transactions. You know, like I loved the idea that I was going to get paid what I was worth, that I was going to eat what I killed, that everything was that I could start every day at zero. Like I could just literally hit the ground and I could succeed or fail. Absolutely. Just based on what I did. But the second thing I heard you say that I really want to talk about for a second is, number one, I'm assuming when you talk about your money, this is from like signing bonus from the NFL, or did it come from something else?
Yeah, signing bonus from the NFL.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Second thing, you made a really interesting comment that I think a lot of people would skip over. And this is one of my pet peeves of this business, is that I always say you either run a business or you run around. And when you really look at our industry is Amway. We are multi-level marketing. You know, all we do is we bring people in. We wonder why there's an 87% failure in the first 5 years. We bring people in and we're like, talk to your friends and family. Talk to your friends and family. We're Amway. That's all we are. And look, we want you to talk to your friends and family. Referrals are a part of our business. No doubt about it. Relationships are a part of our business. No doubt about it. Right. But at the end of the day, we are a business, and there is an investment that is involved in our business. Right. If we want to scale at the level we want to scale, we want to grow at the level we want to grow. You said something really interesting there, and you said, pull the money out. I don't care what I lose in the month. I don't care whatever. This is going to be my seed fund. So when you talk about that for your real estate business, because most people listening right now are like, what do you mean? You invested in your real estate business? Like, it's only a few $100 to get your license. Then you just go and talk to your friends and family. What does that mean? What was the seed fund for? What were you investing in early on? Where was your mentality? Where was your mindset at that point? What was it that you were trying to go after? What was it that you were trying to get?
Well, from a culture standpoint, right, not only football culture, but just the culture that I come from, it's you want to prove to everybody that you're wealthy or you're rich.
Yeah.
But when I really started studying the true wealth, right, it's hidden, right? So And I've always been a different guy. Even you said earlier, like, so I knew I wanted to play football, but I've always been different. Like, I started my first business at 12.
Yeah.
I actually ran one of the top car trading businesses in the whole East Texas area at 12 years old. Right. I just found my collection from my mom. She's a hoarder, so she kept it all. Dude, I have 150 Michael Jordan cards in there in mint condition. Right. And then one of the cards that I have, I just saw go for $300,000 on eBay. I don't have that car, but I have one of them just like it. So the point is, I've always kind of been that thought process. Like, even when I was at A&M, I was 3-time academic all conference, right? So I wasn't just catching touchdowns. I was handling the books and doing all the other shit. So for me, all right, what can I do differently? I knew I needed assets over liabilities. You know, I could go out and buy more, some Lamborghinis and your chains and all that. Or I could say, all right, how can I go invest this seed capital? And so for me, what I did is I said, I'm going to go invest all of it. I want to start from zero. So I just went and started buying as much real estate I could buy. That created this new passion of learning how to develop, you know, acquire, rezone, go vertical. So I started doing development for like 2-3 years. Then I started investing in private equity firms. So I would find
when you say development, like, so you took your seed money, whatever. When you say investing in development, do you mean becoming a developer? Do you mean investing with developers and expecting a return? What exactly do you mean?
So I did both. So I found private equity companies, and I would go in as a limited partner in their real estate transactions. They would be the GPs, I'd be the LPs, I'd invest. Those returns kind of got me going, gave me a seat at the table to see deals. But then I started buying my own land around Texas A&M and things of that sort before this university blew up. And I would buy anything I can get my hands on. And so I would go in and buy up the whole block, and then I would go scrape it, you know, water lines, sewer, new sewer lines, and then go vertical.
Nice.
So I started doing urban development myself. And after
I think that might have gone over some people's heads there. So what you're saying is that before the school kind of blew up, what you would do, almost like Airbnb before it was Airbnb, but you understood that, like, okay, I'm going to buy all this property, this land over here. And you saw it not just as an opportunity for, okay, this has two doors on it, or this has one door, which is an investment term, meaning like, you know, one rental income, two rental incomes. You looked at it. Did you have to look at the zoning first and say, hey, can I take this? Because it'd be a huge risk to buy it if you were buying it based on the idea that maybe I can go up. I'm envisioning, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm envisioning that maybe you did some research and said, hey, these are allowed to go 4 stories. These are allowed to go apartment. This is allowed to go, you know, whatever. What was that process like, and what was your mentality in that? Were you thinking like that or no?
Yes, I was. So my wife got up and went to work because she was a teacher. And I said, there's no way in hell. This is just the team captain in me, the leader in me. No one out working in the locker room. Everybody knows that. So there's no way I'm going to watch my wife get up and go to work, and I'm going to be sitting here in my pajamas. So I got up every day and got dressed, and I would just drive these areas and learn the streets. Then I would go to the city planning zone and pull out the maps, study it. And then I just started building this funnel of, hey, this guy's buying property. I started doing purchase your home letters where I would send letters to him. And I did it all, bro. I would call every real estate sign that was out there. And then people started just bringing me business, right? These realtors start bringing me deals. And I just start building this portfolio. And before I knew it, I had acquired 2-3 street blocks. Well, hell, I can scrape the whole thing, go vertical, and add more density.
Did it help that, I'm picturing this in my mind right now. So if you're owning 2-3 street blocks, you're looking at it, you're buying them now. A lot of times they look for the neighbor to complain, you know, and say, nope, I'm not doing that. Show up at town hall and be like, they're not building up. I'm the neighbor. So was part of the plan, was this intentional or unintentional, that you are the neighbor? So there's no neighbor next door being like, nope, you can't go up. You're like, no, I own that house. I own that house. I own that house. This is what we're going to do. Was that part of the plan, or was that just kind of unintentional where you're like, wow, this worked out. Like, this is good.
No, I don't do anything by chance. Anybody that knows me, when I was 5 years old, I wrote down my whole game plan on how I was going to make it to the NFL as a 5-year-old.
Yeah. Right?
And so, I just took the monopoly mentality, right? Like, if I own the block, who can tell me I can't do it?
That's exactly right.
And so that's what I did. And then I got the city behind me on what I was doing. Well, then obviously what happened? A&M went to the SEC. Jim Manziel wins the Heisman. Now we're the biggest university in America. It blows up.
I was going to say A&M's like a powerhouse now. I mean, that's like
a beast. Yeah. So yeah, dude.
They're ahead of the game on the, what's it called? What is it called?
The collectives.
Yeah. They're like ahead of the game on all that right now. That's, you got other coaches complaining about it, but so you went and you were like, okay, I'm going to take this money. This was, and what year was this?
This was, I got drafted in 05. I retired in 07. I started doing this in 08. But even in 2005 and 6 and 7, I was investing in limited partnership real estate syndication. So multifamily development deals like that. And so after doing that for 2 years, then that's how I got my real estate license, because people kept calling me. Can you help me do what you do? And I'm like, I don't have a license. So then I'm like, well, shit, I might as well get my license.
There you go.
My license.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. So you were doing all that without your license at that point. But so for you, it was also a pride thing. It was like, I'm just going to sit at home. I'm not going to, like, I got to go figure out what to do here. I'm going to take that competitive nature. I'm going to take that drive. I'm going to take that, you know, where other people know me as a football player. I love what you said. You're like, I was in the NFL for 1 year, less than a year, you know, whatever it is. That's not who I was. What you saw was the byproduct of the inner part of me making that, creating that. Like, and I'm going to tell you, man, I relate to that on so many levels, because I was one of the top agents in the country. We then built a training and coaching platform that's now one of the largest, I say North America, but really it's the world, but only because the rest of the world doesn't really do training and coaching. So I feel cheap saying that when I say the world. So I just say North America. But we did all that. And then we went and we built a transaction coordination company. And then at one point we built a CRM, and then at one point we have a marketing company too. And we do all these things, and you get these people who will look over and be like, well, wait a second. Isn't that the speaker? Isn't that the coach? Isn't that the trainer? And I'm like, wow, you guys are confused. Like what you don't understand is that all of that fueled me to build and become such a successful agent, all of that fueled me to become one of the most successful trainers and speakers and coaches. And all of that fueled me is just what fueled me to do those. The story's not over.
Yep.
You know what I mean? There are so many other things. I'm the same kid that was, you know, running 9 different paper routes through other children and collecting a fee, you know, whatever. Like you missed the story. Like you think it all started when you saw the first YouTube video, and it's like, no, you don't understand, you know? And isn't it funny how people love to do that? They take you as they see you and they go, that's what you are. Oh, yeah. And then they're confused when it's anything else. And it's like, no. You don't understand, like, that's what you saw. That is not necessarily, like, if you were to, I always like to compare it to, take like a video editing, right? And you got that little scale, you know, little film, whatever you want to call it, on the video edit. And then you got that zoom in, zoom out, where like a small moment can either look really huge, depending on how you zoom it, or it can look like it's minute. It means nothing. I tell people all the time that the problem is that you're looking at this as a zoomed in version of what came into your life at that moment. And you haven't seen the whole picture yet. Yeah. Like, there's something more that drives it. So I love that, man. Like, that is, that's crucial, man. I love that. So you get into, go ahead. What was that?
When I was going to say, you hit it on the head. We're all wired a certain way, but there's only so many of us that are wired the way we are. Right. There's not many of us, man.
That's right.
A lot of people want to be entrepreneurs. That's like saying, look at all these football players. You know how it goes. Everybody wants to be a quarterback. There's only so many Tom Brady's. There's only so many of those type of mentalities, the Russell Wilsons of the world. Yeah. I mean, the you know, the Pats, Mahomes of the world. Like, it's not many. And that's how it is in this game. Everybody wants to be an influencer. Everybody wants to be on Instagram looking cool. But when you get behind all of that shit, who's truly an animal? Who truly understands
the
warfare? And that's why I just laugh when I see so many people posting stuff these days, because it's not genuine.
I get worried, man. I get worried when people want to be an influencer, or people want to be. I get people all the time. I'll be at events and I get it in my Instagram DMs. I get it at events and people will come over and they'll be like, Jared, how do I be you? I want to do like, I want to, you know, that kind of a thing. And I say to myself, it's almost like when someone goes to a top producing agent in an area, they're like, I want to be the number one agent. And I'm like, do you know what that means? Do you understand what comes with that? Do you actually get it? Or are you just fixated on the idea of everyone loves you? You have money, you have all these things. You don't see everything else that goes on, right? I always call it, I call it the 1% rule. One of these days I'm going to listen to my publisher and write the next book. But as of now, it hasn't happened yet, but I have this thing called the 1% rule. And the 1% rule is really simple, man. It's, you know, what you're actually known for usually is usually less than 1% of what you do on a daily basis. You know, like when I walk down a hall or I walk by, you know, at a major conference or at our own conference or whatever, I'll hear people talk and they'll say, oh, there's Jared James, the speaker. Oh, there's, you know, whatever. And I think to myself, less than 1% of my life is spent on a stage. Mm-hmm. I spend more time earlier today, you know, going all over the outlets with my kids, getting them school clothes and getting whatever. And nobody goes, there's Jared James, the dad. They go, there's Jared James, the speaker. But what makes you worth that 1% title that has almost, it's less than 1%, is the other 99% that nobody sees, that's not Instagram worthy, that's not going to end up on your stories, that's not, you know, I said to an audience the other day, I said, hey, you all want to be top producers, right? Well, to be a top producer, I promise you, you're going to spend less than 1% of your time at a closing table, which is really what makes you a top producer. All of that 99%, all of that boring crap, all of that, you know, the system building and the organizational building that has to, and all of that stuff that you, you know, that you don't want to do, that's what makes you worthy of the 1%, right? And so when someone says to me, hey, I want to be you, I want to be whatever, I go, are you sure? Like, I'm about to hit a 31 day stretch where I've got 24 events in 4 different countries. Do you know how much fun that is? That's not fun. That's flights. That is alone. That is back issues. That is trying to find time to work out. That is talking to your kids on FaceTime. That is, do you really think, like, you hit the nail on the head when you said some people are just built different. And a lot of times I'll say to people, I say, I get why you want it. And I get what you're doing. And I appreciate it. Like, I know what you're doing. It's actually a compliment that you're saying that. But sometimes I don't think you understand what that actually means. Like, what actually, sometimes the thing that makes us who we are, that drive, that whatever, it is the greatest blessing in our lives. And it is also the biggest curse.
For sure.
Because you can't put it away. You know what I mean? It's like Superman when he's coming up and he figures out his superpowers. And until he figures out those superpowers, he's just laying in the corner covering his ears because he's hearing everybody's problems. Yeah. You know? And the thing that was his greatest detractor, the thing that he thought was going to drive him to suicide, was his greatest superpower. And so those powers aren't for everybody. The way that an entrepreneur like you thinks, the way that that's not for everybody, right? And I worry about people who want to be Superman. You know, it's like, yeah, you don't have a respect for what it actually means to be in front of people all the time. You don't know what it actually means to be driven in a way that it keeps you up at night. You don't know what it means. Like, you don't, I love the fact that you don't get it. It's different, you know, like, I don't know if you relate to that or not, but that's how I look at it. So man, you get into that, man, you get into the real estate side, you start investing, you invest with people, you also invest yourself. Are you basically just taking and saying, okay, I'll risk this amount, a percent of my money? Or are you just throwing it all in? Are you doing like what? Cause you're mentioning wife, which means you still have to somewhat like, you know, I'm no dummy here. What's that look like?
No, dude, I'm all in. I'm all chips on the table. I wanted to, put my money to work. You know, Robert Kiyosaki talks about, we have a career and our money has a career.
That's right.
My money's career was real estate. So I just went all in. And like I said before, I told my financial advisor at the time, if I'm going to lose, I'm going to lose on me.
That's it,
because
man.
I know if I bet on myself, I can wake up tomorrow with that education, because there's only wins and lessons. There are no losses.
Yeah.
There's only a loss if you quit.
That's right.
Just keep banging the hammer. And so I was able to build a considerable portfolio. Started a real estate brokerage, scaled it to $1.2 billion in sales in 8 years.
Did you get into the brokerage business? That wasn't because you mentioned before about the real estate license. When did you get into the brokerage business? And did you go broker right away? Did you go selling? Were you out there trying to get clients, or were you just doing it for your own business? What did that look like?
Yeah, so 2010, I got my license. I did 7 transactions the first year, like $1.3 million in sales. It was a tough time to get in the industry, but at the same time, I was learning. I was at Keller Williams.
Yep.
And I was expecting a little more from a training standpoint. I didn't get it. So I went to him a couple of times. Hey guys, I know I can be great in this. I just need a little help. Didn't get it. So I just said, all right, well, I'm going to go start my own brokerage. So I wasn't able to be a broker yet, but I found an attorney to hold my license until I hit that 2-year mark. And when I talked to Trek, they said, you got to do this many transactions in order to become a broker. So I said, all right, whatever that number is, I'm going to hit it. And I hit it. So that next year I went from 1 million in sales to 21 million in sales by myself.
In 1 year.
In 1 year.
What do you attribute that to?
A lot of the things that I talk about now, which is time blocking, true lead generation. I always talk about sweat equity versus check equity. We think we can buy our leads into being a top producer. We think we can buy billboards. We think we can do Facebook ads. But there's certain principles and fundamentals that need to be in place in order for you to scale your business. Understanding leverage, understanding how to get listings. You can get a million listings, but if you don't price them right, they're going to go stale, right?
That's right.
And I really just focused on those things. And then I got a transaction coordinator because I understood I can work on my business or in my business. Or
love it.
Income producing versus non-income producing activities. Every time that I go get a contract and I got to go write it and then collect the checks and go to the title company, that's not me doing, I call it TBS, time best spent. I'm not focused on the things I could be doing best. Once I got a transaction coordinator, I blew up. So from that point, after having that kind of success, then a couple of agents were like, whoa, would you bring me in and show me? I said, well, obviously it worked for me. So you guys can be my guinea pigs and I'll teach you the game. And so they blew up their businesses. I think the lady ended up doing like 30 million her first year with me. So then I just started growing. So my per person production at my brokerage for 10 years in a row was 39.6 transactions per person. So our PPP, not That's PPP fabulous. Loan, but per person production. We know the average agent in America closes 7 to 9 transactions. So we were 3 to 4x the market. And then after doing that for 10 years, I just got exhausted with being the broker. And then that's when I merged with EXP last year. So now I'm growing my organization all over the nation, in all 50 states and 25 countries. It's going good, man.
Dude, I want to hear about that. I love first off, you talked about TC, a transaction coordinator. I think you probably heard me before. We started our own transaction coordination company and I promote TC. Like we have our organizational structure for teams, and it's changed over the years. The very first hire in my mind now is a TC. There's no risk. There's no whatever, like start delegating right away, day one, time to go. And I'll get people sometimes that'll say, well, you're just promoting TC because you have a transaction coordination company. And I'm like, you don't understand, chicken or the egg here. I have a transaction coordination company because I so believe in this model of having a TC, that what makes you great as an agent is what makes you suck at managing your own transactions and vice versa, right? Like they're going to do it better. You're going to get more referrals. They're going to follow. You're going to create the McDonald's fries, meaning our TCs follow the same custom workflow every single time. Doesn't matter how busy you are, how slow you are, what time of the year it is. Every client gets the same exact experience. And if it doesn't close, you don't pay a thing. When you have no closings, you don't pay a thing. When you have more closings, you pay more. It's a no-brainer for every single person in the industry. So I'd love to hear you say that because I wasn't aware of that. And the other thing I wanted to bring up from what you said that really jumped out at me was you talked about, yeah, there's all these different ways. You can buy, you know, Facebook leads. You can go on Google. You can do all these things which can bring people to you. But at the end of the day, you know, there are fundamentals of our business that all of that money spent is not going to create your business. Mm-hmm. I used to tell people that, you know, going on Twitter doesn't make you cool. It just shows everyone even more how uncool you are. You're just broadcasting it to everybody. Going in that space doesn't do it. And in the same way, you know, buying a bunch of leads and bringing them to it, a very inexperienced or, you know, an agent who doesn't know what they're doing just exposes, you know, your inability to work the relationship, to work the transaction, to build the infrastructure, you know, all of those things. At the end of the day, you are who you are. You can't buy your way out of that. And it's one of the things I love about the industry. There are as many apps as there are, as many, you know, cool new tech tools and social platforms and all these things I believe in. There are fundamentals that you can't get past. Like, you know, I can't be a public speaker and not be able to speak. You know, I can build a big audience, but if I get on stage and I suck, career's over, yeah. You know, like there's some things you can't fake. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I love that. So you talked about your transition, EXP, Glenn's a friend of mine. I love seeing the success he's having. You know, he's a good guy, down to earth guy. I don't tell people a lot of this story, but back in their beginning, me and him and Brad Anderson met, who had come over from Zillow, who's a trainer now for EXP. And they showed me their stuff and they showed me, you know, their model and what they were doing. They showed me their technology. They showed it all to me. And they're like, hey, we want you to be a part of this. We want you to whatever. I can't do that because that's career suicide for me. I'm like, yeah, okay, I start working with you. That means every other place, you know, whatever. But I love seeing them do well just because, you know, he's a good dude. What made you go that route? What made you work with them?
Yeah, I just knew we had did so much to take a startup brokerage, no franchise, no nothing from where we were at to, because I don't give a dang who you are, what you say, numbers don't lie, right? Anything you do in a billion, when a billion's on it, you've done something right, right? And so we did that in College Station. At the time, average sales price of 275. So to hit a billion in sales in 8 years in this small college town, and I mean, it was ridiculous. And my goal was to do it in 10. I did it in 8. But I just was just out of gas, bro, like out of gas. Wow. And I started studying the model. I met with everybody under the sun. I was meeting with Gary Keller every other week. I was meeting with Robert Refkin at Compass. I mean, anybody in the residential real estate game, I knew him and I was talking to him because we ran practically one of the top independent brokers in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
And but I got to a place where I said, okay, how do I give my agents a seat at the table? Giving them equity, giving them ownership, creating other revenue streams for them, because I'm saying I want them to be an entrepreneur. It's literally the name of my podcast, Real Estate Entrepreneur. So I can't be saying that if I'm not truly helping my agents become that. And when I really sat down and studied the model and I was able to offload a lot of the responsibility as a broker, it was a no-brainer for me.
So where's your time go now? Are you still selling? Are you the broker now bringing people on? Are you more focused on your investments? Are you more focused on, like, where is your time now?
Yeah, so I'm focused on helping other leaders be great. I'm so focused on helping real estate agents understand how to set their business up. Like you said, I tell people TC day one, same thing.
Yeah.
So I'm helping real estate agents become real estate entrepreneurs. I'm helping them create 7 to 10 new income streams, showing them how to set those income streams up.
That's right.
And I'm expanding my organization in all 50 states, and now I'm in different countries. So we got the number 3 team in Canada. I'm actually working on a couple teams in the Caribbean, and I'm just helping them, man. I'm focused on helping real estate agents become the best versions of themselves, really understand that they need to invest. I tell people, you can't sell your way into financial freedom.
That's right.
You cannot sell your way into financial freedom.
That's right. I say it a little different than you. It's probably not as good, but I tell them if the only way you make money is by going to a closing, you're a highly paid Las Vegas stripper. Like, you got to do something to get something. Like that is not how you get to financial freedom. And one of the shames of our industry is that people are living in the gold mine and living paycheck to paycheck. They're working in the gold mine and living paycheck to paycheck, meaning not realizing how much opportunity is right in front of them outside of just tips, commissions, you know, outside of just, I've got to do something to get something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't get it. But the industry's not teaching us this either. You know,
right.
They're okay with, like you said, 87% by year five, only 13% of agents make it into year five. And I believe of that 13%, probably 10% of them don't have any money saved. They don't have other income streams. They're not set up for success. And that's why you've never been to a real estate agent's retirement party in the last 30 days, because they don't retire. They just sell real estate till they die or they get out of the industry. And we got to, it's a pandemic and we got to fix it.
Spend money before the commission even closes.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Now be honest with me. Did you set up a team in the Caribbean just so you could visit there?
That's the goal. Yeah. That's what me and my wife got married. We got married in St. John.
I was going to say, don't play with me. I know that's what's going on. Caribbean. Oh, out of all the places in the world, the Caribbean. Well, what a shock. Okay.
Yeah.
What's next? Jamaica? I mean, where are we going next? Like, I'm sure it's somewhere else warm. And
Dominican Republic. I met with a team today in the DR. So,
dude, I think I'm going there in February. I can't start real estate teams. That would be bad for my business. But at the end of the day, if I was going to, I think that's where I'd start.
Yeah.
I'd start somewhere over there. That's awesome, man. Good for you. What would be, you know, we always like to say this kind of stuff, but it's just the truth. I mean, you got a lot of people listening right now on a lot of different levels. And I mean, there's a lot of truth in that. We have a lot of things we really believe in. You know, I always say that one of the things that really separates me is that, you know, when I'm talking to you, when I'm training you, when I'm coaching you, I'm looking at you from the perspective of an entrepreneur. Not as the perspective of an agent. You know, an agent is one line in the water. That's one line in the water. That's one area of expertise that you have. But you got to look at this from the perspective of an entrepreneur. You know, that's really why you got into real estate, because that's why I did, because it allowed me to flex those entrepreneurial muscles. You know, it allowed me to do what I do, like we talked about earlier, bet on ourselves. What would be something for somebody who's listening to this, who hears what you're having to say, and they're like, yes, yes. Yes, like all of that. I want to do all of that. I want to invest. I want to do. What would be your advice to someone who's coming in who doesn't have an NFL contract, who didn't get injured, who didn't get, you know, whatever? See, what I love about listening to your story is, yeah, you had that initial seed money, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of people who start with money and don't end with anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you still have to know what to do. You've still got to educate yourself. You still got to put in that sweat equity. There is no shortcut, right? What would be your advice to someone who's watching this or listening to this that is thinking that way and going, I want to do what you're doing on some scale. I want to move beyond just having commissions. I want to look at this differently. What would be your advice to someone like that?
No, that's a great question. The first thing I would say, it starts with wanting that mentally, right? To understand, I think right now our industry with the Selling Sunset shows you mentioned earlier, I've never seen it. But these different shows and the YouTubes and the Instagram, we can step in front of a house and stand in front of a Bentley Phantom all day.
Yeah.
What do we really have set up for our families? Because I'm telling you, you guys are only as good as your last commission. Just like football, you're only good as your last game, right?
Yeah.
And so my thing is, it starts with them mentally understanding that they need it, because we got to get real estate agents to put their pride and ego and leave it at the door.
Right.
Okay, you sold a lot of real estate. So have I. Who gives a fuck, right?
Yeah.
So now let's think past that. And so really getting them to understand, all right, I need another income stream. I need financial literacy. I need an exit strategy. I need multiple income streams. You know, it used to be where it was like, oh, that sounds cool, but now it's a necessity. Yeah. So I would tell them start there and then start reading or listening to books, right? And find 10 books that you can listen to and start taking notes. I've set up literally my plan for anybody in my org. I tell them $1 billion real estate agent is my first path. I teach them how to set up teams between 50 million up to 200 million a year in volume. I literally have the model to do whatever they want in that volume and to take the cash flow off of that business and go buy income producing assets. And then obviously do cost segregation, tax planning, depreciation, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So then the second path is $1 billion real estate investor. And then my last path is $1 billion real estate entrepreneur. I tell them on each transaction, there's 20 to 22 companies that make money because you brought them the deal.
Title,
mortgage, insurance, home warranty, inspection, survey, boom, boom, boom.
All the stuff that doesn't even show up at the closing. There's so many. We have a process called the Core 100 where all these different businesses that you never even think of. And yet on the average real estate transaction, there are 25 to 40 different referral options.
Yep. And why not own a portion of that business? I didn't say run it. Become a buy into it, be an affiliated partner. As long as you disclose it to your client, you get distribution. So I'm always trying to show them the game, and that's where I would tell an agent. So I would just say, start there, man. You got us too, and we can help you in any way we can.
You're trying to be the Kevin Hart of real estate. I don't know if you know what I mean by that, but like Kevin Hart, I saw an interview with him the other day, and he talked about how, you know, when he was trying to be in movies, right? And then he started looking at all the different processes, and he realized how much power he had. He realized, you know, the pull he had, and he's like, how come we're not making this movie? How come we're not the one that's on the back? How come we're not? And he's like, that's it. I'm not getting involved in any projects that I'm not an owner of in some way, that I'm not a part of on the back end, that I'm not. He's like, I'm the one making this happen. You know, it reminds me, one of the reasons I kind of mentioned this quickly, and I don't think I've ever said this to my audience, although I get asked this question all the time. They're like, how come you haven't come out with a book in years? And number one, because it's like having a child. It's so much more difficult than you think it is. You know, once you're done, you're like, I'm never doing that again. But number two, that whole process was like, I remember I was talking to the world's largest business book publisher, and they were trying to get me to just do all this crazy stuff for the book. And the rate they were offering me, the percentage they were offering me. And then when I looked at everything that they wanted from me, they wanted all my relationships. They wanted all the brands I worked to buy. I was doing all the work. I was everything. I looked at them and I'm like, so what is your role in all of this other than collecting? You're just playing off of me here. And that was a huge eye opener to me, where it's like, hey, once you build something where you're the driver of what you're doing, like in a real estate transaction, the agent is the core. They are the center of everything that's going on. Why wouldn't you be benefiting from everything that's going on? Because it's their business that is affected. One of my favorite stories is one of our previous coaches, one of my good buddies, and one of our first ever one-on-one students way back when, Mark Manaha. He talks about how his title rep, I think it was, showed up. He'd given his title rep a ton of money, and none of these people would work with him. You know, he couldn't make any money on it. He couldn't whatever. And his title rep pulls up in a beautiful, it was in Texas, beautiful, you know, pickup truck, just gorgeous, brand new. And pulls up, and Mark's like, oh my God, I love your truck, man. Your truck is gorgeous. And the title rep goes, well, you should. You paid for it. And you know, back then people didn't even think like that, but that is a message to us today to understand the power that we have, like how much of this we all control. And maybe not day one, you're going to be able to take ownership or be able to start this or be able to whatever. But what I love about what I hear with you is it's a process, and you just started really looking at it and going, okay, what's the mentality here? Where is it we're trying to get to? We should have a part in this. We should have a, and look, there's still seasons you go through. There's still a process to get there. But the mentality, the end game when you began was, hey, we're not going to be the one just handing everything out. We need to have a piece in all of this. Otherwise, and that's why I use the Kevin Hart analogy, because he thinks the exact same way, where he's like, I need a part in all of this. I'm not just, you know, the clown in front of the camera, you know, yeah. Like I'm going to have a part in all of this. And at the end I win because I do. And I understand my power. So I love that, man. That's awesome. Anything to add to any of that? Or are you, before we kind of get moving here, because I know that we're kind of at our time. Is there anything else you want to add for any of our listeners? Is there anything else you want to add to anything we've said here?
No, man, I'll just leave a closing thought, man. I'm going to jump on my next call. Appreciate you bringing me on the show, bro. I want to stay in touch. We do have a lot in common. I think there's some ways we can work together offline. We can talk about it. But my encouragement to all your listeners is just stop following people who have not executed what you want to achieve.
That's right. That's right.
Really dig past the reels and the Instagram and the TikTok dances and tell them to show you the numbers.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, like, you either have tried to chase that, you know, mountain and climb the summit that I've, or you sitting at the top of the mountain. That's the only way I'm listening to you. But yeah, man, if I can do anything to help, let me know. You can look up my Instagram. It's just Terrence Realtor, and hit me up, brother.
I was going to ask you, man, like how should they get a hold of you? Do you want them on Instagram, Terrence Realtor? Do you want them, like, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah. So just terrencemurphy.com is my enterprise site. You know, we have 20 companies that we own and run. I'm invested in another 30. So I have about 50 companies in my portfolio. And then Terrence Realtor, just T-E-R-R-E-N-C-E, Realtor, R-E-A-L-T-O-R. I spell it out because there's a lot of fake accounts on Instagram right now. Yep. When everybody was getting verified in the NFL, I wasn't on Instagram. So now I'm dealing with fake accounts every day. But yeah, hit me up on Instagram, man, or the website, and would love to stay in touch, bro.
All right, my man. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on, man. Seriously. Really appreciate it. I think we helped a lot of people. I'll let you know when this comes out. But thanks, Terrence. We'll talk to you soon, man. Thank you.
All right. See you, brother.
Thanks so much for listening. Please take a moment and go to www.connectwithjared.com to connect with Jared James on all the platforms you are active on. And please remember to subscribe and leave a positive review on the platform you are listening on if you enjoyed the podcast.